where we're about ready for Bert to run the first time. Earl's term was over, then Happy had a term. Do you remember much about Bert's first race against Happy in 55?
Yes, very much so. I was commissioner of conservation, and of course I had a rather peculiar relationship with both Earl and Lawrence. I was, in addition to being the commissioner, I was their political handyman in the sense of strategy and writing and doing a lot of that kind of work for them. I wasn't in on that discussion, but the story is that Earl came down to Washington with Lawrence, and they got Doc Beecham. And Earl told Doc that you just can't run for governor. We don't think. We just need another kind of phase. So I don't know how honest was they were, but anyhow, said he couldn't run. The story is that Doc said, well, if I can't run, you can't run anybody that I don't approve. And which of course included me, because at that time there was talk that I might run, because I had built kind of reputation and a lot of favorable publicity because of Park Road. But the Doc vetoed me right quick, because Doc died and I didn't get along. Doc was, of course, a great believer in the patent system, and I didn't. And so we just didn't get along. And they went through a lot of names, including John Palmore.
Yeah.
And several others before they finally came around to Bert. Because I figured that since Ed Manton, West Kentucky, and Louisville as governor, it'd be a good idea to try picking the East Kentucky man. And Bert was elected judge up there, and beat a Republican, getting elected, and I figured that he'd be a good candidate. And Bert was very much surprised. I know I was in a meeting with him over at his house in Lexington shortly after he was picked. He was surprised and somewhat reluctant. I didn't have much to do with the early stages of the campaign, but somewhere a few days before he's supposed to open his campaign at Shelbyville, Earl was down in Washington, called me from Louisville. Said, I've got the opening speech that our candidate proposes to make. You get Lawrence, and I want to come over and go read it, see what you think about it. So he did, and we got together, read his speech. He said, what do you all think? I said, well, if our candidate makes this speech, I'm going to quit now. And Lawrence reversed it just loudly. He just won't do it all. But we talked for 2 or 3 hours about it. And then
what was wrong with the speech?
I don't remember the details, but very fuzzy. We agreed that I'd take it over back to my office on the typewriter and try to do something with what we had agreed in talking about. I did. Earl took it back to Louisville, and Bird wouldn't buy it all. Well, one thing, he had his commitment that if elected, had to have an increase $26 million in new revenue taxes.
Yeah.
And that's where Lawrence and I both said, my God, you just can't possibly do that. Half it eat you up with.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. But Bert bought most of what we had submitted, but that tax, the additional revenue, he said, I'm not going to run unless I commit myself to that. Of course, too late to do anything about it then because it had been advertised, can it? Well, he made that speech at Shelbyville, and I remember talking to Eric DeVore, and I said, Bert, he said he was very reluctant to take anybody, anything else somebody else written. He said, after all, I have a certain style that people are familiar with. And I said, Bert, now who in the hell would be familiar with your style of writing? Well, lawyers read opinions. I said, there's a hell of a lot of difference between a legal opinion and a campaign speech. But anyhow,
I remember that speech, Lord.
I said, Bert, if you're right, if you're going to read the speech the way you read that one, then for God's sakes, don't take in something but anybody else wrote then, because it just read through it without an expression at all.
He was a bad speaker for a long time.
And of course, that commitment killed him. I remember we had a meeting every Sunday on Lewis Cox's front porch. Primary. And everybody gathered to report on what they were hearing from various sections. Well, I had been down West Kentucky on a trip, making some speeches. I got in the meeting late. Most of them were reported. And the time I got there, and what I heard, they were very optimistic. Everything looks fine. I said, my God, that looked fine to me. I said, happy is cutting you to pieces with a sales tax. The long year in West Kentucky is that Combs is going to pass the sales tax and Happy's against it, and we're not going to part. I said, he is killing you with the sales tax and your commitment about a $26 million tax increase. Well, they poo-pooed me. I said, well, all right, wait and see. He's killing you with it. And of course, it did. Bert made a lousy candidate that first time around. Second time, he made good. He learned a lot. And
Happy was an awfully good candidate that first race, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was there as best I've ever seen him. And it was the best piece of demagoguery I've ever seen in my life. I remember you had those checks on him. And that speech he gave over Cheapside in Lexington, where he just said he was going to deal with the check, just ignore the issue, and talked about his war record. It was the damnest thing I ever saw.
That check thing hadn't gone for a while. That was a funny one. They had those checks. They got them from the fellow who had been a partner in a liquor wholesale outfit.
Decker.
I forgot his name. In Lexington, who knew about the deal, and they
gave the checks to the National Distillers. I mean, from Republicer, and this big
Chicago outfit.
Chicago,
I forgot. Anyhow, they
were written to him while he was in the Senate. Yeah. Is that right?
They were trying to get them released. They first tried through Joe Westfield in Fulton. And it didn't go. She didn't get anybody accepted. Didn't get no publicity about it at all. So they finally said, well, Ward, you're going to have to do something with them. And you try it. So I tried anything. So I did. And we got a lot of nice publicity for a while. And I happy on the run. But then he came right back with the sales tax. We sprung it too early. Of course, we felt they had to do something because the campaign wasn't going well. But there wasn't any question about it. If I can remember the detail, he. He was instrumental in getting Whiskey released.
Oh, is that what it was?
For some reason, I forgot the detail. Yeah, I got it.
Whiskey released from warehouse, from bond?
I don't remember the detail. The Chicago outfit. My memory's got bad. I have to almost go back and look at files to refresh myself on all that stuff.
What happened after the Shelbyville opening, that disaster?
I don't remember the details.
I remember two or three of the speeches. Happy. That was the Clementine Weatherbine $20,000 rug campaign, if you recall. Jesse, it was marvelous demagoguery. Clever story, sorry.
Oh, it was sort of like what happened every few years. There'd been two administrations of the same crowd. People got disappointed. A lot of promises made hadn't been kept. And a lot of people made mad. In politics, your enemies never forgive you and never forget and never card. And friends just don't work as hard as your enemies. So when you accumulate a lot of enemies, they come up, pile up. And then too, the Burt, of course, was totally unknown in the state, a matter of trying to build up something. And Happy was happy and had the reputation, the name.
He was good. I look back on that, and I remember how good he was as a campaigner.
Yeah.
He could sense resentments and
he made the most of his remarkable ability for remembering names. It's always one of my weaknesses because I was very weak on it. Happy could, in a crowd, he waves a friend, call names.
And he'd promise anything, he'd say anything. He was like Joe McCarthy in one respect. He would tell a lie, and when they caught him in that lie, he would tell a bigger lie that was more impressive and make people forget the first lie. Remarkable. Gee, he's a terrible man. Hurt the state a lot. Do you recall anything else about that race that you think is worth remembering?
No, I didn't. I didn't really take a lot of part in it. I didn't. Wasn't around Campbell and Edwards at all.
What did you do? You back on the paper then?
No, I was still Commissioner of Conservation.
And so Happy went
55.
In. Yeah.
And so I figured going to lose anyhow, and then I spent my time trying to do what I could with a program to get it along as far as I could, get things done, because I knew the odds were that I wasn't going to be around.
Who'd Happy put in?
Laban Jackson.
Well, he's agriculture.
No, he's Commissioner of Conservation.
He was in parks, you know? No, parks hadn't been separated yet.
No.
It's still a division.
He put Ms. Ben Kilgore in as Director of Parks.
Violent?
Yeah. And she and Laban fought for 4 years.
What happened about her? She died?
I don't know.
Ben did?
Yeah.
Ben was a nice fellow.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben had died, in the early 50s.
Yeah. So you just stayed on in conservation?
Yeah, until December. Resigned, went to Washington. Earl wanted me to go up there. I didn't want to, but I felt obligated to him because he's going to have a rough race. And he wanted me to go on to Washington to get ready for that campaign. I did. I was practically as well, came about as close to running the campaign than I ever did.
This one against Houston?
Yeah. That was one of the, I think, a real tragedy,
yes,
because Kentucky needed Clements and Washington. They did so much for the state.
That's what I said over there.
The real tragedy was when he was real nervous about the campaign. He had a right to be. And because he thought Joe Bates was going to run a better race than he did. But when he won that thing by around 80,000 votes, I recall, he completely lost proper perspective, in my opinion. I well remember that after the primary, we got talking about because Barkley had died.
Did he beat Joe Bates for that?
Yeah, in the primary. Mm-hmm. Barkley had died. And he was going to have to pick somebody to run November, or serve out the term. And so they started talking about Lawrence running. Well, Lawrence talked to me about it, and he said, I don't want to run, I think it's a mistake. And I said, I think it's a mistake, too. Well, they had a meeting over in Louisville in headquarters one night. Oh, it must have been a week after the primary. All of his brain trusters around, including Lenny and Lawrence and some others. I was in the meeting. Ed Farish was there. And they proceeded to get tight, both of them. And were so certain that they had things going their way, because it went so big. Determined that Clements just wanted his boy and said it with him. So they agreed, and Lawrence would run. Ed Farish, I disagreed with him. In fact, the next morning, Earl and Lawrence were having lunch and breakfast. Farish and I were going to Frankfort. We went, stopped by, and Clements said, where are y'all going? I said, I'm going to Frankfort. And Farish said, too. I said, I don't think we're coming back. But of course we did what we could. But
who
the thing
Lawrence?
Hmm?
Who beat Lawrence?
John Sherman Cooper. Of course,
oh,
this is
sure.
What I was afraid of, that
mm-hmm.
Happy was so violently opposed. Farish and I urged Clements to take Joe Leary.
Yeah.
I said, damn it, you're friends of Joe Leary's, and Joe's a decent fella. And if you take Joe, for God's sakes, you don't have to go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe would be bad in the Senate with you. But no, he wanted just somebody that he felt he had more complete control over. Well, of course, as soon as they picked Lawrence, they were happy. Went to Washington and started pressing around and
happy bolted,
urging them to get Cooper to run. And they, of course, talk Cooper into running, and that's what did it. Clements would have beat Mark, said man Cooper on the ticket. bad time for Kentucky.
Yeah.
But Clemens was really on the ball. He knew how to operate. Not only in the Senate, but in the government departments there in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I had an opportunity to see. See, I was up there for a year with him as assistant.
He could have done great things for
and, people. Barkley was there, too, most of the time. And of course, I was so close to Barkley. And Barkley didn't have a man on his staff. So I represented Clemens and Barkley both. And going over to the highway department and flipping in the on flood control projects, particularly that sort of stuff. And I had an opportunity to do a lot of work. I representing Clemens, I worked with an assistant to another senator who was very much interested in water conservation. And we worked on a bill to add to the water conservation program, which Clemens and Senator Kerr of Oklahoma sponsored. But Clemens did more to get some of those flood control projects, which I think were important to Kentucky, than anybody.
And then Happy beat him in 55. Holmes and Clemens came back in 59.
I wasn't active in that chairman campaign at all because I was with the chamber. See, I was with Clemens a year in Washington until he's defeated. And I worked for a year for the National Real Estate Realtors Organization.
What year was that?
57.
When you came back to the chamber?
Yeah, they called me from Lowell one time. And asked me to come down there as area development director. I wasn't interested. I decided to get out of politics. I was offered a job on the Hill after Clemens was defeated, but I wanted to get out of politics entirely. And this public relations job with the Realtors opened up, and I took that. And I didn't want to come back to Kentucky. We had bought a house in Washington. And I made class and I was crazy at Washington. And then I was told, and I've forgotten who it was to make contact with me. Anyhow, if I come on back, if things developed the way they thought it was possible, as soon as KP resigned, I could take his job. And so the prospect looked pretty good. I investigated pretty thoroughly, talked to a lot of people, including Wilson White, some others. And it hadn't appealed because I realized I missed being in Kentucky, missed being a part of something, Seth, because hell, in Washington, you're nothing. Mm-hmm. So I came back in October 57, I recall. So I didn't the campaign for governor in 59, I didn't take any part in at all.
You watch it?
Hmm?
You watch it with some interest?
I watch it, yeah. But I didn't take any part in it.
Of course, you were somewhat divided in it, weren't you? There was Holmes against Waterfield, and you had ties to both of them.
Yeah. Although if I had been active, I would have been for Combs, because I had more ties to Clemens, of course, than I had to Waterfield. And Waterfield had been associated with Happy so long that
it was somewhat surprising when Waterfield threw his lot in with Happy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They just seemed to be different sorts.
Yeah, it was a practical thing one to do. Although I don't think he ran with Happy in the primary, lieutenant governor, as much as he just ran and won it himself. It was after he's elected, nominated, of course, he obviously that if you want to be governor, you better get along with Happy. Of course, Bert wouldn't have won if Clements hadn't worked out the deal with Watt to get Watt to run for lieutenant governor.
That's true. You don't remember any of that meeting, do you?
I wasn't around. I mean, I wasn't at it.
You didn't see a whole lot of it then until Bert pinned you after the truck deal blew up.
Well, when the truck deal blew up, Wilson was the first one came to me. He said, I've got my reputation stake over there, and naturally I'm interested in getting someone in there that I think would be honest about it and protect my interest and image as well as your own. And I think you can do a job. And I'm sure he talked Bert into it too. I think Clements also endorsed it. Toby did. In fact, Clements called me before Bert did. And he said he'll appoint you if you'll take it.
Did Earl give you any indication of the relationship between him and Combs?
He told me the whole story. They had made a commitment to
Cook
to appoint his man as director of equipment, highway department. And they,
this is Cook Peak.
He persuaded Clements that they needed to buy some trucks, and that Cook had a lot of trucks out on lease that were in real good shape and they could get a real good buy out of them. He gave Clements a written report on them, on the condition of the trucks. And on the basis of that report, Clements went along with the deal. Clements said, thinking that they were getting a good deal at the pricing. Well, it was only after they got some of the trucks in Frankfort, started digging into them. Courier Journal started its investigations, condition of them, discovered that they were some damn old beat up trucks. And contractor just worn out, slapped a coat of paint on them, and that the deal wasn't a very good deal after all. Well, Clement's story is that he was convinced it was a bad deal, and that he had told Cook that they couldn't go through with it, and that he was Department of Finance working out the detail of canceling the contract. When Combs announced, Combs told Clements, he said, I'm sorry, but I've got to protect myself, I've got to cancel it. And Clements said, hell, I'm working on canceling it. And Combs said, I've got to protect myself, got to do it myself so I can get credit for canceling it. And that's what stuck in Combs and Clements. He felt that Combs threw him the wolves to protect himself. Well,
Bert told me that Earl agreed to the cancellation, but maintained to the last that it was a good deal. That the purchase of the trucks overall made good economic sense.
Well, I don't really know. I think Bert was right in that he had too much at stake himself. He had to show that he wasn't going to put up with it, that he had to take the lead in cancellation.
Two people, including Wilson White, have told me that one reason that Earl held on to the truck team was that Thurston Cook had promised Earl that if the deal went through, he would put Pritch on as on a retainer as counsel for that section of the company.
I never heard that. The only thing I heard was that they just had a very strong commitment to Cook to
he'd been take the finance chairman.
He was the finance chairman.
Yeah.
And that it was on the basis of that commitment.
You didn't hear anything about Pritch?
No.
Did you know Pritch at that time?
Very well. I had known Pritch pretty well since he came back to Washington and started practicing law with Phil Ardery. They were employed as attorneys for the REA.
Yeah.
And so I got to know him and Ardery real well during those early years. And I followed his career pretty well, and then later on became very close friends.
I guess you worked a little with him in the 55 campaign. Mm-hmm. That was the first time he sort of came out from under the law. His conduct during that campaign was very erratic, though, wasn't it? As I recall, I could hear was that Pritch was on the seventh floor of the CEO bar. Had a room. And he'd go in there and lock the door and wouldn't come out for a long time, or he'd disappear for several days. He was still very depressed and very erratic.
I don't know anything about that.
Back to the 59 campaign. You knew nothing about it. You didn't. When after Combs was inaugurated, Combs and Wyatt, what do you think of it? Of the administration?
Well, I thought it had a lot of promise because I thought the combination, particularly Wilson and Harris, was good, and particularly Wilson, I had confidence in Wilson, both of them Burke. And there's an opportunity to overcome a lot of the mistakes that have been made during the Chandler administration, and a lot of the neglect. Bert incidentally asked me to come back to Commissioner of Conservation, and I wouldn't do it.
How did you view the relationship between Combs and Wyatt?
I thought it was very good.
Uh-huh. Did Combs take advantage of Wyatt? I mean, did he put him to work, really? Did he exploit his abilities?
I don't think it's a matter of taking advantage of him. I think it's Wilson that wanted to do it.
Did he exploit Wilson's abilities? Did he put Wilson to work efficiently?
Well, whether he put him to work or Wilson just put himself to work, I don't know, but same result. He really worked at it, and Burke went along 100% with his commitment to Wilson would take the lead in the Department of Commerce.
Yes.
There wasn't any question about who was running that program. I think Burke was very happy with it. And Burke was enthusiastic about supporting Wilson for Senate.
Yes. I have heard that Bert said, I've never to this day had a crossword with Wilson. That our relationship's always been.
I would believe that. I think
it's a warm,
fine relationship.
A lot of people say that Bert put Wilson to work on industrial development, economic development, in order to get him out of his hacker. And he said he never heard from him after that. Wilson was off running around the country.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it's mutually supplemental program. I think Bert listened to him a lot. I remember in the 60 session when they had sales tax up
yeah.
for which I was working Chamber of Commerce at the time, we were interested in some details of it.
Yeah, I see.
And so I spent some time over there. And we had some amendments we tried to get them to agree to. But Wilson told me at the very last that we've just got to pass the bill and we just only have time to consider some amendments. After the bill passed, I talked to Wilson. I said, Wilson, hell, it's not a matter of Chamber of Commerce. There were some real serious questions about some provisions of the bill and what they would do to industrial development in Kentucky. And there's some other problems in connection to this thing that these amendments address that ought to be considered. I said, you passed the bill now. The least you all could do is to try to set up some kind of framework under which some consideration can be given to regulations under which the bill is going to be administered. He said, why don't you sit down and put your ideas in writing? And I did, and he said, don't take them to Joan Burke. Well, he did. He got in touch with me and said, Burke, okay, I'm going to appoint an advisory committee on regulations with you as chairman. So we set up what I consider to be a real good committee, not just a damn stack thing, but people with some good, some judgment. And we worked for three of them once, I guess, with the Department of Revenue and others on proposed regulations. For example, on the manufacturing. In certain manufacturing processes, particularly steel making, there are some products that go into the manufactured steel that are completely consumed during the production of steel. Our contention was it's obviously unfair for the industry to pay tax, sales tax on these products that are completely consumed during the manufacturing, and then turn around and have their final products subject to tax too. And they agreed to that. And one of the regulations was that products that are completely consumed during production don't have to be taxed on when you buy them. That's just one example, some technical provisions. The schedule under which the sales tax will be collected, for example. No tax on the first certain cents of sales, 1 cent from we got them to agree to one that helped sales tax. I know after we got through with them, I had several meetings with particular retailers involved, explaining all the details of the thing, and wound up with pretty general acceptance. Because they were reasonable.
Were you surprised when Combs came to you and asked you to come back as highway commissioner?
Oh, yeah. Very surprised. Well, no, I won't say surprised. I was surprised, yes, but not particularly surprised he asked me. I don't want to sound too damn egotistical about it, but hell, I had a reputation for being a good administrator and being honest and straightforward and the kind of reputation that they wanted in there as Commissioner Highway, because obviously after the scandal they had, they needed somebody who had a pretty good reputation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was surprised. Didn't want to do it. Gladys threatened to divorce me if I took it.
Um, talked to Earl about this.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl said, go ahead and take him.
Yeah, he was, as I say, he called me before Combs
did.
I think Earl got stored me before it's over because I didn't consult with him about what'll be done.
Did Earl indicate to you that there was great bitterness between him and Earl and Bert?
Mm-hmm.
He did?
He felt Bert threw him to the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he ever recovered from that. I know when I ran for governor, I hadn't been as close to Clements as I had been. I just assumed that he was going to be farming. He wasn't. He was from Waterfield, in primary. Told me. Said, I've come very close to early and since got out of it. I'm the director of the insurance company. And I said, and I'm tied up with Bert Combs. Well, of course, after the primary, he did all the good for me.
That's strange. That's unusual. When you went into the office, what was the day of that? You ago? Approximately.
I would say it's the last of June or first of July, in the middle of summer.
In 62?
61.
61.
No, 60. Primary, the election was 59.
Right. And he went in.
And Earl resigned in June.
Of 60?
60.
How did he go in? Huh. Mm-hmm.
I was commissioner a little over 6 years.
So you went in as highway commissioner. What did you find?
Well, the morale was...
Bert was terribly committed.
Oh, yeah.
Would you explain that it was not any unusual commitment so much as it was a commitment to keep doing things the way they had been done?
Primarily that, insofar as this matter of purchasing concern, for example. And incidentally, I don't think it put it in this on tape. I was telling you a lot about this at lunch, if I recall. You want me to go over that?
Yeah. Everything that you would like to have, and this doesn't have to be released in...
Well, I'm
anything we would like to have, anything, I think that would help the record in the future.
Yeah, because actually... I have refused on many occasions to talk for publications about stuff because, after all, I feel very friendly toward a whole lot of people that.
This has nothing to do with publication.
And I'm not about to hurt them. The first day in office, I was convinced that I had to get on top of purchasing because this is where the scandals had risen. So I issued an order to. Be no more purchases without my personal approval. I gradually worked out a plan, including employing some people in purchasing and equipment in whom I had confidence, so that this rule was relaxed on everything except equipment, but heavy equipment particularly. I hired a man that I consider to be a specialist on highway equipment, had worked for a highway equipment dealer, knew the game.
Who's that?
Tom Wolf.
Oh, yeah, I knew Tom.
now with an outfit in Lake Road. And we developed plans for specifications for equipment to guarantee that there'd be, it'd be open, they'd be wide open for competitive bidding. Did this on everything we could think of, including trucks and automobiles, incidentally. Because the practice had been to rig bids on trucks and automobiles as well as anything else. I remember going to buy a new automobile for the commissioner. And a dealer up north Kentucky came to see me and said, I've been trying to sell the highway department vehicle for years. Never been able to because they rigged the damn bids and keep freezing me out. I said, well, you bid this time because it'll be wide open. He did, and he bid. He must not have made the money at all because he just practically gave it away. Because he got the bid because it was wide open. We particularly in connection with the purchase of the scrapers. At that time, the highway department bought a lot of them because it was maintaining a hell of a lot of gravel roads around the state, particularly rural roads, which required graders. And they're expensive. They cost $45,000 a piece. I found very soon, because I, from various sources, found out about it, that it had been a tradition for the highway department to have a deal with a certain manufacturer who would designate an agent in the state to represent him in putting in bids on scrapers. And they designated the agent as someone that named the governor. And the Coleman administration had its agent, whose name I still can't recall, but Scoop Sherwood was in with him. And they would. And the commission to the agent on greater than running size 40%.
As I had $1 million machine.
So I was determined to bust this up, and we developed specifications. Because what they would do, you write specifications with something in there that only that particular grader would be. And we had to develop specifications that were wide enough, broad enough, that any of the reputable manufacturers could meet. And we did. And we bought graders for half what they'd been paying for. Of course, I got a tremendous kickback that this was unfair, that the promise had been made that they'd have these commissions. And but I said, well, I'm just not going to do that anymore. They had the same kind of arrangement, and incidentally, as far as Coleman's concerned, this was merely a continuation of a practice that had been in effect I don't know how many years. But they had the same kind of arrangements on buying automobiles, truck tires, batteries, gasoline, oil, almost anything the highway department bought. They had a deal with it, and they, under the commitment they would, in advertising for it, they'd rig the bid in such a way that only that particular brand would compete.
When Earl asked you to take over from him, did he give you any indication that you would be expected to honor these commitments?
No, not Earl. Neither did Bert. Because my understanding with Bert was that I told him, I said, Bert, you're in trouble, your administration's in trouble over purchasing. And I've got my reputation maintained because I expect to go back to the Louisville Chamber of Commerce. And I'm not going to come over here and run my reputation by participating in kind of deals regarding purchasing. And if you name me a commissioner of purchasing, my guy's going to be wide open, competitive bidding, everything we buy. He said, that's all right, I want you to protect your reputation, because you protect your reputation, you protect mine, too. So, I think Bert was in complete agreement with what I was doing. He just had to concede that these people that were so disappointed that yeah, he's committed to them, but this fellow Ward over there, he's just a hard-headed nut that I can't make him do these things. So, as a result of these policies, we bought prices, let's say, half what they'd been paying for, like everything the highway department had. We also developed some real close supervision over bidding by a contractor. And that was just the toughest thing in the world. Keep highway contractors from, you know, agreeing among themselves to buy a piece. Hardest thing in the world to catch, hard thing to prevent. Fortunately, contractors hadn't been a whole lot of work, and there were a lot of hungry contractors. See, that's 60, hadn't been a whole lot of work, and we were able to get pretty good bids for a while, but I was making a question, but at times, there was probably agreement among some of these contractors. Say it's the hardest thing in the world to keep trying to. The federal government's been working out for years trying to catch it in several states and having some success with it. There was a tremendously bad morale problem in the highway department. The salaries were low. Patronage was the name of the game. The tradition was that the governor's campaign chairman of the county would be his contact man, and he would do the hiring and firing in the county, the highway crews. Again, that's tradition. Mm-hmm. And I bucked it and didn't always succeed, but of course, we had to get the work done, but in some cases it was not a bad thing. I can well remember Strother Melvin Buford was a contact man. Strother was a very decent fellow. He was an insurance agent, didn't need money, been a state senate, loved politics. And Strother was interested in getting a good job done. He had his reputation too. And so it was helpful when they had a fellow like that in charge, really helpful to get their help, because it would help in screening out undesirable and then hiring really good people. So in many instances, that system was not bad. But I'd say the majority of cases was bad. But the combination was that the morale among the, particularly among the engineers, was very bad. Out in the districts, they were housed old garage buildings and messy places, and their reputation not very good because it's considered most pure politics. And I sat in trying to better that. One of the things did was build a modern highway office building in every district, nice buildings, so that they'd take some pride in their surroundings and their jobs. The issue aided a campaign to try to bring along some of the younger engineers. And I found pretty early that the compass that had to get rid of a lot of deadwood. And one way to do it was to adopt policy requiring mandatory retirement at 65. Because there had never been a policy of retirement. Generally, when a fellow got up to 70 years old, they put him in some soft job. The planning division was filled with these old fellows that they outlived the useless and still on the payroll. So I initiated a policy requiring retirement at 65. We lost some pretty good engineers as a result of it. We got a tremendous lot of deadwood. And that was encouraging to a lot of these younger engineers who, so many of them had worked 2 or 3 years highway department and quit and went out in private industry because they figured there wasn't any future in the highway department. The promotions generally had been on the base of seniority. And I stopped that, brought in some of the younger fellows, and promoted them right along and encouraged that morale situation. I'd say that in this area, there were three major areas I concentrated on. First, getting purchasing under control, personnel, planning. They had no planning. It was a place where they dumped these old fellows. Completely reorganized it, but entirely brand new young personnel in there. And brought the thing along, hired some outside consultants to do some, like Wilbur Smith Associates, to do some consulting work on particular surveys. Completely revamped the system. Took a lot of roads off the system, put some others on. The push on the end, getting the interstate system underway right fast. These were the accomplishments that all I
looked at. Permanent Parkway, Mountain Parkway, was it sort of in a separate division,
no,
since it was a toll road?
No, it was built just like any
other
highway, and we operated it.
It was started, according to May, the morning after Bert's election. They met in the grass color of the seal bag, he and Bert and Earl and two time punchers, and agreed to start right that day throwing dirt on the mountain parkway.
Well, I don't know. Of course, I wasn't there. So they may have, but I doubt it.
Bert said, I don't remember that.
I don't either. Because
May says that Henry Spaulding was greatly to be credited with laying out the mountain parkway. He had it laid out much before.
That's right. Henry Spaulding had worked on trying to get a modern highway between Lexington and Hatteras for years. Yeah, I'd say he's more responsible than anyone for the route. I think Bill was wrong about the start work right away because I have no recollection. My work hadn't been started before I became commissioner, but I'm not sure.
There are lots of little inconsistencies here that I can't account for, but there's no account in the paper of them. Bert says that had also had Carlton Pikeville and also had plans for Mountain Parkway.
I think I know what you mean. He was an insurance man. One time, state purchasing director.
That was his name. Norm Christmas.
Yeah.
Norman always pushed for that.
Yeah, Norman was a real leader.
Yeah, the sense for next far as I recall from seeing that thing. You started work on the interstate.
Well, it had been authorized by Congress, but very little had been done about laying out any of the routes, planning for it.
What was the procedure? You, a the State Highway Department laid out the general route.
The Bureau of Public Roads had to prove it.
Approve it.
But we initiated.
Engineering specifications and so forth for the road, the standards.
Well, there were fairs and gun roads, federal standards, but not restricted and not.
They were not, you didn't say anything about shoulders, drainage, thickness of.
No. Some general rules regarding access.
Yeah.
General rules regarding shoulder widths, medium width. The pavement type, though, not at the state, and of course, that pavement type, the reason for that is because it has to be special studies of soil conditions to determine pavement type.
What were the day-to-day relations between you and the governor's office? You were in all the cabinet meetings. Did you and Bert get along well?
Personally, very, very close. We didn't really have any day-to-day contact. About the closest contact you might call is one that he had a fellow who handled his patronage in his office.
Who's John? John Green did sometimes.
Well, one time he wasn't the main one. And had contacted him a lot about trying to get jobs from those people.
Who was his patronage man that wasn't John? I thought John handled it all.
Can't remember his name. Worked for the Appalachian Hospital Program later.
Oh, yeah, Fontaine Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, I. You don't like Fontaine?
Personally, but he didn't get along with me very well because he didn't win very many. But he was where he always held. I tried. And damn war moved along.
They're all Marine Major. So you wouldn't say that it was a problem, would you?
Not because I had such a firm commitment from Bert. And backing incidentally because Bert approved what I was doing. In fact, he told me after the election, we kept chatting about it. He said, you and I kid each other a lot. They're serious very much, but I mean seriously, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming over here and doing what you did.
Who were the powers around Bert? Who had his ears? Did anybody? To whom was he very sensitive?
I think Wilson was influential. Lewis Clark was influential. I think May was. In a way, I don't want to trust it too much, but I mean, he was influential, if no other reason than he was so determined. You know, May's attack. Wouldn't want to sit back.
There's no subtlety about that. No.
He was Close to Arkman is pretty close to him. Pritchard.
How about Felix Joyner?
He had Rod Thompson's Felix.
They were not close.
No. I don't know what he didn't have Felix in a very. I always felt Felix was sort of pushed aside into a total authority job. I don't know why. Felix wasn't as influential as he has been.
He worked under Earl.
Yeah. Started out on Earl.
Bob Bell, another little called the Southern Regional Board.
Yeah.
Southern Regional Education or something like that. Southern Regional Training Board. Did you ever talk to Bert about the sales tax revenues bonus?
No.
Did you ever talk to him later about how he viewed his overall administration?
Oh, not in any great depth, but generally. He felt he had made a lot of accomplishments, and did. I didn't talk to Bert very much about legislation, except that, which might affect the highway department, and strip mining. And I was very active. In fact, Kelly had known, I wrote the first state strip mine law in 1952.
Something about that?
We didn't get passed, and I assume that just before the 54th session, Arnold called one day and said, "You ready to have strip mine law?" I said, "Hell, I thought you'd forgot about that." "No, I'm going to pass one. I'm going to pass one this time, too." And we did. And that thing was put in the Department of Conservation Administration. It had a special division.
Who was doing that? Elmore Graham? Hmm. Or was Elmore under Bert?
He was unhappy.
No, he was under.
He wasn't in there. I hired a man who was and worked with the Soil Conservation Service. What do you call the engineers who deal with water control?
Hydrologists.
Engineers. And his name, right now I can't remember. But we started a program and...
How did you get mixed up in the strip mining?
In the conservation.
In conservation. Was there much strip mining going on then?
Yeah.
Most out in West Kentucky, or had it started
most
in
West Kentucky? And we started the first demonstration project to control. We had one down on off the mountain. And
mountain or western?
West Kentucky, off what is now the West Kentucky Parkway.
Yes, that's the old Badgett name.
I don't remember. But it was in the... forgot the camp. But we... they had the first program, required the first permits, first supervision of it. I suppose, of course, as compared with modern administration of it, it was a very scientific sort of thing. But we didn't have as much strip mine going on then. But we started.
It hadn't really hit East Kentucky big, had it? Bill
no.
Sturgill started the first big strip mine. or the Koreans down in Bell County, started when I tried to have somebody from Middle Burn about 52.
No, it started, I don't remember, we had a fight with one outfit that claimed that it owned the mineral rights of Pine Mountain State Park. Pine Mountain State Forest. And determined that we're going to exercise their rights to strip. We took them to court and won. That was way back in. That's all there about King Commission Conservation. But they're not that. I meant an active and connected to the legislation. In 1960, the recession legislature, there's some legislation that's proposed regarding strip mining to improve the law. And Bert, I don't know how he ever knew, I guess he knew some way that you had been interested in it before, asked me to help keep an eye on it. I was with the chamber, but I was over there a lot. I did that, and I watched carefully.
Was Matt Rick in there?
Yeah.
J.O.?
Yeah.
Where'd you find Matt Rick?
Hmm?
Where'd he find Chuck Matt Rick?
Well, he ran a Kentucky Farmer magazine in Louisville and was active in agriculture circles. I discovered that the bill which had passed the House, went to the Senate, and I started checking on it, and the bill which had reported to the Senate was not the bill which had passed the House. God, I raised hell, and the clerk lost everywhere. And they finally found it, but somebody just tried to pull something.
Mm-hmm. What year is that?
60.
I want to get back to the highway department. And you said you were highway commissioner for 6 years. For the last two of Bert's, or three of
last almost four.
Of Bert's?
Yeah, you see, I went in the middle of
60.
It was about 6 months after. So,
and then you went over into Breathitt's.
Yeah.
You want to talk about, was there any difference between the Breathitt and the Combs administration, as far as you were concerned, and I was?
Well, I'd already gotten, of course, established in a lot of the fights that I had over purchasing and personnel and planning, and those were out of the way.
Who did you have for planning?
You remember Calvin Grayson was,
yes,
later on the commissioner?
Right.
He was assistant director. my memory. I told you I had a bad memory for names. Bob.
Was Bill Leonard in there?
Oh, he was a... he was on payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Clements had paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept him on. I found it was quite helpful to have around. Doing a lot of political errands and
mm-hmm.
a lot of the kind of things. And there's certain, regardless of how independent you may be, there's certain things in connection with your political position. There's certain things in connection with politics you have to do. Expect you on tall. And Bill was very helpful in political errands.
You were there then. Did you take any part in Ned's campaign?
Yeah.
Against Happy, for example?
Well, not openly, because commissioners prohibited by federal law from if you administer federal funds, you're not mm-hmm. supposed to be active in politics, so that I couldn't be openly active. I was.
Well, What do you think of that, Tim?
Well, they had, of course, had problems because he was relatively unknown and young and looked younger than he was. Certain amount of antagonism built up, the Combs that violated his promise not to have a Truth Act, the past one. So it was a rough campaign, and of course, not almost beat. You know, he only won about 14,000 votes.
And, were you surprised when he didn't tackle me?
No.
You
weren't? No, I think by that time, happy. Way beyond his prime.
Yeah.
Way out of it. Of course, he more so when he ran into me. That's what probably cost me the election, winning the primary. See, I won over 100,000 votes in the primary. And it just got everybody so damn optimistic that I couldn't get anything done. All during the summer. September, nobody would do a damn thing. I all went home, practically closed headquarters down.
Was your job under Ned? Why did he just ask you to stay on?
Hmm?
He just asked you to stay on, Ned, did
he? Yes, I think he sort of took it for granted. You see, they had talked me into agreeing to run for lieutenant governor when Brett was around. They wouldn't take me for candidate for governor, but they insisted that I run for lieutenant governor. And I reluctantly had agreed and was unhappy about it. I thought it was and I just didn't want those rebels. They kept on that regard. And the being unhappy about that, and the pressure of thinking about running for office and trying to be LA commissioner too, other kind of problems. And about 10 days before the time for fire came around, I asked Crow. It wasn't a civilian, it was put in the hospital. And the doctor later on said that you was lucky, really, because he said that it really wasn't a stroke, it was what they call a spasm. Although if I had a partial paralysis, then my speech was affected about a month. But anyhow, I was wound up in the hospital. And I told myself I can't run, and obviously I can't announce it because I'm in the hospital. They didn't much believe me, I think, because they knew I'd been reluctant to run. And you know, they sent Lawrence over to the hospital to see me, just to verify that I was in the hospital. And I guess he went back to medicine because my speech was affected. So
who did you get?
Hmm?
Who did you get to run?
The what? The Waterfield ran. Not normally.
Right.
So, nothing was said about it. I went back to work in about a month and gradually got put back where feeding the chips under doctor care all the time. And, I don't know, Ned, I think, just sort of took for granted that I'd stay on. And he said someone there about it, and I said, well, I'll stay on, Ned, but I won't stay on if you put Bert's cousin,
Ted Markham.
And there's so-called Royal Hobby Commission. Oh, I'm committed. I said, okay, get yourself a highway commissioner, because I'm not gonna put up to him another 4 years. I've had that with him now, and I'm not gonna do it. Because he's a son of a bitch if there ever was one. Of course, I just ignored him. I took over.
What was your big difference with Ted?
He just was a typical mountaineer politician who wanted to have everything. He had, at that time, the rural highway money,
2 cent money,
could be spent just as a damn pleased. And in the first 6 months there, he had committed $600,000 to Clay County. His county. And he was seeing to it that he's going to see to it that his friends and Bert's friends were taken care of.
He probably pleased Bert.
And I said, by God, you're not going to do it. And I told Bert, I said, it's not going to work this way. So one way to guarantee that it would work that way, because 62 session legislature, I had a bill introduced, setting up a formula for distribution of the money among the counties on a ratio of so much for area, population, miles of road, and distributed it on that basis. And Bert was very unhappy about it. I said, well, that's where it's going to be. I got the bill passed. They said you can't get a bill passed without the governor, but I did. Because Commissioner Highways has some influence too with the legislature. And so that controlled the distribution. And I also required that it had to be annually. It had to be an agreement worked out with the fiscal court of the county on where that county's share of the money would be spent, how it'd be spent. And written up in contract form. And I required that these contracts be submitted to me for approval. So I just completed my bypassed Mark Markham. Of course, he was mad and couldn't cut me every opportunity to snipe at me. And I just wasn't going to go there again and go through that story again. So Ned gave him a job as assistant over in his office. It didn't make any difference in my relationship with Ned. I had the best relationship with Whitney of any governor. Ours was a real close working relationship, real personal relationship. Gladys and Helen and Lawrence and I played bridge a lot and socialized a lot together. And I'd say it was extremely close, but then next step in my relationship with Ned was very close.
Was close?
Very close.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of respect for Ned, and he had a lot of respect for me. And a completely free hand. The only commitment he had, and water fuel trapped into that, was to extend the West Kentucky Parkway down there to the purchase. And he made that commitment. He had water fuel out there on a campaign trip one time.
But the extension you're speaking about is the Jackson Purchase Parkway?
Yeah.
Okay.
And made a commitment to said to run. Commitment to run it. From extension of the West Kentucky Parkway down to Murray, to Mayfield, to Fulton. And I said, first place, Ned, it's a damn silly commitment. In second place, how in the hell are you going to run a highway from Edible from to Todd?
How is it going to that?
An excursion that close to it, but it's almost straight line from of your Kentucky Dam Village to Fulton. Skirts Mayfield and Fulton, that front stream. It's just not a good road, it's about wasn't justified, but it's, it was the only one commitment that, that Bert had. I mean, Ned made, had it. He felt so strongly about, because he, it's the only one he got his neck stuck out on. And since then, I had so many of these problems with Bert over the highway that this one got to that. Now, I guess hell is my home territory. I couldn't say, well, feel too bad about it. All of us. It's not a good. If it'll pan out, since the West Kentucky Park Network has now been completed, it'll do a lot better.
But you had no episodes under Ned similar to those that you had under Bert.
No problems about patronage.
Uh-huh.
Or highway promises, that sort of thing. Person, none of that. Of course, I eliminated the practices. So.
In your opinion, did Bert have to make all those commitments with were they just expected?
I don't know. It's hard to judge those things. And some of them were, well, I guess one of the best examples, because I ran into it, Charlie after went over there. They asked me to come down to Bowling Green to a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce. And they pulled out letters, newspaper clippings, letters from Bert, committing that if elected governor, he's going to improve old 31W all the way through all of Bowling Green. And they said, here it is, right, no question about it all. So when you're going to start on it? Well, I already prepared because I knew what you're going to do, and I said, I'm going to do it. Oh, damn it. Here Clement McCombs is committed to it. I said, I know he is. He agrees that he did. But I said, there's a factor that Combs wasn't aware of when he made the commitment, and you all didn't aware of it either, personally. Interstate 65 is going to be built from Louisville down through your Bowling Green, Tennessee. And I'm going to build Interstate 65 and build as fast, it'll be the first one in Kentucky built. It generally parallels 31W. Now, it wouldn't make any sense at all to build Interstate 65 and come along in four lane 31W. That was your commitment. Right alongside of it. And I'm not going to do it. State doesn't have that kind of money to be that foolish. And I didn't take this job to be foolish. And Combs didn't ask me to take this job to be foolish, so I'm not going to do it. But I'm going to build Interstate 65 fast. Well, they weren't happy. They were mad. Stayed in there for a couple of years. But after I got to Interstate 65 open, I talked to some of those same people. And I said, now what do you think? Well, of course you were right. But I don't think Combs knew anything about Interstate 65 going close from there when he made a commitment. And to talk about improving 31W, a major artery, didn't sound so bad at the time. Now, whether he had to make it, I don't know. He felt that he had to do it.
If you don't mind, let's go back now to the conservation aspects of your career, which really sort of got you into state government.
Yeah, I have been interested in conservation. It's somewhat a coincidence, after I became commissioner, to find how much legislation had been enacted that I had sponsored, that was administered by the Department of Conservation. I had been very much interested in forestry, for example, and had worked like hell to get a big increase in appropriations for forestry. I'd always been interested in agriculture. I had worked as a newspaperman very closely with the Farm Bureau of Paducah. I was very close to Bill Johnstone, who was then county agent. Paducah. And we, with the newspaper, sponsored the first soil conservation district in Kentucky, in McCracken County. Got it there. And we got it established in a watershed which served New Hope, my hometown. So I was very much interested to follow the soil conservation program from its very inception. I became interested and was in water as a resource. I sponsored the act under which Kentucky agreed to be a member of the Ohio River Valley Water Sanitation District, compact with eight states. I sponsored the legislation. I sponsored the bill which provide for the creation of soil conservation districts in Kentucky. We'll wind up in Department of Conservation, Forest, Soil Conservation, Water Pollution Control. Was a member of the Ohio Valley Commission for 8 years, was the chairman 1 year. Very, very interested, very active in the program. I was the Soil Conservation District Division and Department, and supervised the creation and operation of soil conservation districts. I mentioned strip mining, Water Pollution Control Division there. I was a member of the State Water, I wrote the act for the Water, Kentucky State Water Pollution Control Commission, and it's in the Department of Conservation Administration. I was extremely interested in the whole broad subject of water. And water was Kentucky's most valuable resource. It's only a really renewable resource, that forestry. I sponsored some legislation related to water rights. There was no statute of any kind in Kentucky regarding water rights. In other words, anybody could go out and build a dam on a stream and block it up and take all the water. And there was nothing in the law that would keep them doing it. This act provided that you could not deny the downstream owners their rightful share of water. So that my legislative background and my own interest as a newspaper man, as an individual in conservation, just sort of naturally fitted together, in addition to the park thing. And of course, at that time, one of the big divisions of conservation was publicity.
Uh-huh.
So it fitted in too. We developed to the damn
effect. Were you sort of surprised when Earl asked you to do that? You had been a critic of his.
Sure, I filed an opposed to him.
Yeah.
When Ram Governor, and I told him that. In fact,
did you feel that he was getting a critic out of the way, maybe, and getting a critic on his side?
Well, there's little to that. Yeah, I think Clements was, he was a master at that sort of thing.
Did you think that there was something of that later when Bert asked you, me, and Herman Evans to be on that park board, that he got on his side with three men he didn't want carping at him on editorial pages?
No, I don't really think so, because I'm the one that promoted the park board idea and wrote the law and got it passed and talked him to agree that we three ought to do the same. No, I don't think he thought that's what I think. Bert was sincerely interested in having a good park program. And he really thought we would do the kind of job that we did. No, I, of course, I don't, particularly in your case, and a little bit, I guess, in Herman's sake, sure you wouldn't want to hurry him to hell for a career journal fellow over there, one of his boards. That's not harmful in that.
I didn't say there's any harm in that. I just wondered if that wasn't a motive.
Well, that was maybe
a possible motive.
A little something to it.
You went in under Earl, the Conservation Commissioner. When was strip mining, for example, called to your attention? You said that you... When did it become serious?
After I became commissioner, because I wasn't really aware of it prior to that time.
Did Peabody start getting down in West Kentucky?
I don't think it started at that time. Of course, it had become quite a problem down on Madison.